At last, after thousands of years, after eons and ages gone by, it is now time to resurrect the great Shadow Dragon. Now rise, rise, and we shall conquer the world.
Yes, that lot. Oh, hey, Cardwiz, what are you doing here?
Ordo, I thought you were dead. What happened?
I don't know, but since we're here, let's record the Emblem Support Podcast. Wielding the legendary falchion, I am Ordo, and he, wielding the shield of seals, is Cardwiz.
Build an army, trust no one, except for us. This is the Emblem Support Podcast. And my good friend Ordo, before we take the falchion to complete its destiny of destroying that foul shadow dragon once and for all, I must ask you, what have you been playing recently?
Ooh, buddy, since it has been a long time, I've actually been playing a myriad of games. But if I had to pick one out, I'd probably say back in the end of February, I beat Persona 3 Reload, which I think that is it's a good game, but I feel like as much as I've heard, you know, Persona 3 hyped up throughout the years as being, you know, it's so much better than 4, it's so much better than 5, it's one of the best entries in the series, it's so underrated, I just think it's good.
Personally, I would agree with you of the 3, 4, and 5, which is, of course, the most popular Persona games. I like it the least personally for a myriad of reasons, but I absolutely adore that they went on with the full-on remake of the entire game and fixed a lot of the problems I had with the original, including, you know, actually being able to control your party members. That's nice.
What's interesting is you can actually set the game to play like the original game if you felt like it.
Yes, I can make it so Mitsuru is constantly casting charm on all my enemies, even though most of them are immune from it. No, I don't want that in my life, no. Well, yeah, I know they added the ability to control the characters in the portable version, but just like I like being able to move around the city and stuff like that. I hate that we didn't get the female protagonist as well. That would have been like a really cool thing to have in this game, but Persona 3 as a whole, it has a cool story. I love the themes of it. I like a lot of the designs of it, but it is definitely my least favorite of those three because a lot of reasons. I don't love the enemy designs. I kind of hate Tartarus being the only thing. It's why I will, even today, I will still vastly prefer 5 over 3 and its remaster because I love the dungeons of 5, and you still get that endless dungeon with the mementos in 5.
Yeah, agreed. I think my problem with it is that the story pacing seems very slow. It's like this game starts off, I want to say, does it start off in April?
I believe it does.
Yeah, and no one really questioned. It's not until like July, which is a long time, to one of your party members just kind of sits up and is like, okay, what's going on here? What are we doing? It's almost like too slow of a pace. I do enjoy the characters. I love that. I love the soundtrack. Man, It's Going Down is my alarm. I love that song so much. And it will some parts of the end, I'm not gonna talk about the end, but some parts of the end really get to me. I can't talk about the end, but some parts of the end kind of get to me. But another thing that I think it's kind of a black mark against the game, it's not against the game itself, but it's against me personally. Like for years I had friends who were really into the Persona games before I touched Persona. Like the first one I touched was like 4 on the PS. Well, it's a PS2 game, but I bought it on PlayStation 3. But I've known about, you know, Persona 3's ending for like at least a decade plus. So when everything's kind of going down, I'm just like, yeah, I kind of know. I'm just like, what's the context? But something that I also find is very hard for me is I can't really connect with the protagonist for 3 because he doesn't really have like a lot of emotions or facial cues. He's just kind of like a blank face the entire time. It's something that I kind of like about Persona 5's protagonist. And I know it's kind of weird to compare Persona 5 to Persona 3, given that, you know, there's like, what, about a decade in between them. But the thing that's kind of cool about Joker is that he does have facial expressions. He has, you know, things that Holt do, like I think it's some kind of party with your wit and you're with, is it Kasumi? Yoshizawa? I can't remember what it is, but you select something and he'll just start like randomly dancing, or, you know, he smiles, he grins, he smirks, he frowns. He gives you something to connect with, right? It's like he's giving you a little bit so you can connect the chains of the protagonist and you, which I don't feel is the same with the Persona 3 protagonist at all.
Yeah, it feels like they were a little bit too loyal to the original version. I really wish they had taken a lot of those quality of life and those storytelling character elements from later games and incorporated them to this, but they made a faithful adaptation and people love 3. People love that original version of 3. I am not one of them. I still think it's a great game. I'm still glad. I still happily put 100 hours into this game.
Same. I spent about the same amount of time in this game that I did in Persona 5 Royal.
I did, but it was, overall, I still vastly prefer the 5 experience more. I still vastly prefer the 4 experience more. But 3 is still definitely worth the experience. And again, I think it does its themes, its central themes and storytelling of, I can't go into the biggest theme of it because that spoils the game. But it's like, I think it does a good job with that. I just don't love that. It feels like almost all of the confidants in 3 are almost copy-pasted directly from the PS2, because like some of those are just like a couple of lines that I don't love a lot of the storytelling from some of them, but I'm being picky and just like my personal preference shows, but 3 is still a great game. I'm glad I got to spend 100 hours in that world.
If you have Xbox Game Pass, then it's totally worth your time. And plus, you also get the expansion pack for free too, which is $35 on the other platforms. So, yeah. So, hey, you got some time. You get an RPG to play, something that's kind of chill, kind of nice. Something that you could like. And if you've never played a Persona game before, like Persona 3 is a pretty good one, I'd say, to get into. Play Reload, then jump to 4 Golden, then 5 Royal.
And then we'll probably get all the other games remake by the time you finish those 100-hour adventures.
So true. But Cardos, what have you been playing?
It's been so long. I've beaten so many JRPGs, and so many of them were so big. I think I'll start with what I think is my game of the year so far. Like a Dragon 8 Infinite Wealth.
Oh, not the one I thought you were going to go with.
Nope. I will talk about that other game in a little bit. But I absolutely adored, like, I don't want to say soft reboot of the Yakuza franchise, because Like a Dragon 7, like, is a continuation. It just has, it has a new character, new battle system, new stories to tell, but it is still a part of the world. And I haven't played 0 through 6 really, so I still feel like I'm not quite getting all the context to things that were mentioned in it, but I was able to grasp enough to absolutely fall in love with 7. Dear Lord, switching it over from the action to just turn-based combat with a job system was such a huge improvement for me. Because I love the world of Yakuza, I just never loved the battle system. But the change to 7 to the turn-based combat, and it's even improved in 8, because you get even more job classes, you'll get more party members, you get to explore Hawaii, and it's so much fun to explore it. And now you have better ways to get to know your characters and your teammates, and that'll help you get the jobs unlocked a lot quicker once you actually are able to unlock the job. It does take a little too long to unlock the job system, in my opinion, but still, Like a Dragon 8, I don't think I love it as much as 7, because like 7 is one of my favorite games of all time, but 8 takes a lot of the systems and improves it. It is a wonderful experience. Like, new mini games, of course, because like being able to ride around on a motorcycle, or not a motorcycle, on a bicycle, and deliver food while trying to dodge cars and dodge random people. Give me that. Give me a crazy taxi. Like, they have freaking crazy taxi built into the game as just like one of the 100 mini games. Not 100, but you know what I mean.
I also believe that there's some arcade game that's actually never been released outside the US is actually in this game as one of the Sega arcade games too.
Yeah, I think like bass fishing of some sort of Sega bass fishing game had never been released before, but it's just like in the arcade. If you go into one of the arcades in Infinite Wealth, there it is. So you get to experience some.
Oh, I thought it was a fishing game.
There might have been another one. I thought I vaguely remember the fishing one being the one that had never been released, but maybe there is another one. There are so many mini games and sub activities. Like some of them I just didn't do. Like I will not and have never touched a Shogi mini game. I don't have the patience to become a master at that version of a board game. I never touched the arcades, but there are still so many other things to get sunk into. I spent so much time, of course, playing Koi Koi, playing the golf, playing the baseball. And we don't have the business mini game in this one, but this game, I didn't even talk about the two biggest mini games. There's basically Animal Crossing, just straight up. A few chapters in the game, it's just like, hey, here's like a dragon Animal Crossing. Spend as much time as you want here. And I spent a lot of time there because the game's like, hey, do you want to get this resort up to 5 stars? And I was like, yes, I will spend like 3 straight days playing this game just to get it up to 5 stars. And it's a good way to make money early on in the game. So if you like it and invest in it enough, that's just a little tip if you want to do that. And also, there's something called Tsujimon, which is just Pokemon. You just have not exactly Pokemon battles, because it's like 3v3 with like you attack one at a time. But it's Pokemon, because you're collecting these guys, having battles. Actually, it's probably closer to Yo-Kai Watch, actually, for a more apt comparison. But Tsujimon, Pokemon, that's what they're going for. And just like, you got to do that. You got to go through all the gyms in order to get to the final boss. And then you can do the arena and gyms as much as you want. It is such a ridiculous, wonderful experience. I adore Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth. And it's going to be hard for that game to get topped as my game of the year.
Wow, that's high praise. Is this one also on Game Pass?
I don't remember if it's on Game Pass. I actually did buy this one. So, like, even if it is on Game Pass, I still spent the money on it. I did end up getting the deluxe edition, so I got extra jobs and, like, extra resources to use. But I knew I was going to love this game, so I was just like, I will pay you the money. If I know I'm going to like a game, I have no problem with just, like, take my money. Please.
Agreed. I do know that the other Yakuza games currently are on Game Pass. I have 7 downloaded, but there's been just a litany of other things that have been in my way, so I've not been able to play it.
Where are you on your Yakuza playthrough list, on your Yakuza journey?
I'm at 7.
You are at 7. Oh, yeah. I can't wait for you to play that one.
I have not... I downloaded it, but then, like, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth has been out for a little bit. And I was wanting to wait a little bit later down the line, but I'm starting to see a couple of things creep through. So I'm like, I need to just finish my remake playthrough plus Intergrade, because I never played that, and then jump into Rebirth, because I actually watched someone play Crisis Core. So yeah, I've got big shoes to fill right now as far as RPGs go.
I'm starting to fear and sense the 7. Remake, remaster, whatever the second one's called. I'm starting to fear those spoilers coming out, so I might need to actually get back to finally finishing the first one. Yeah. So many games. Have you played anything else?
Anything else? Again, I played 7 Remake. I actually booted up my save, and it was just like, oh, the last time you played this was 2021. I was like, oh. I thought this was like maybe a year at most, but no, that's probably right around the time that version, because it was a free upgrade, I believe, for Final Fantasy VII Remake.
It was.
And then you just paid like $20 for Intergrade, and I bought it, and then I just didn't play it. I think I bought it and Kingdom Hearts 3 Remind, which I have also not played, on like the same sale, so that's whatever. Trying to think of anything else I've actually been actively playing. You can probably hear it by my voice, but I've not played too many games because I, at the end of February, because we couldn't get our schedules lined up for anything in February. And then at the very tail end, I caught the flu. So I've been sick all March. And then as soon as I got over the flu, allergy season happened. So I've been going through it for like the past 2 months. I'm not feeling fantastic, but I'm like, I was like, we can't go another month without recording. So here we are today on the anniversary of Fire Emblem and Lucina's birthday, and I believe Path of Radiant's birthday as well. I'm recording an episode. And that's just a quick explanation of me personally. But you did mention, Card, was that you had another game that you had been playing.
One more. I will go through this a little bit quicker so we can get to the topic. But I have been playing a game that I had been looking forward to since I first heard its announcement because of the team that made it. And that game is the Unicorn Overlord, made by VanillaWare, who have quickly become one of my all-time favorite game developers. I need to buy all of their past games, even though I don't like some of them. Because they're a nice company. They put out demos, so if you don't like them, you don't have to buy them. But Unicorn Overlord is such a wonderful game where you play as a blue hair protagonist, building up an army, trusting no one as they go to face the big bad, who are dealing with possible resurrected necromantic evil wizard bad guys, as you and your blue army face off against the evil red army. And just like, wait, what game are we talking about? We're talking about Fire Emblem, right?
I know, Unicorn Overlord. See, it's so funny because there's an artist that I follow on Twitter. I can't think of their name. It's like Bakanetsu or something like that. And they said, oh, I'm streaming Unicorn Overlord. And then like one of their overlay things was just like, stop comparing it to Fire Emblem. I'm just like, how do you not compare this game, at least in its beginning hours, to Fire Emblem? You're a blue-haired lord. This is all within like the first hour, by the way, so I'm not actually spoiling anything. You are a blue-haired lord. Your kingdom is overrun and betrayed. You lose a parent figure. Your most loyal knight, who is an older gentleman, takes you and escapes from the castle. And that's very Jagan, that's very Finn and Thracia, although, you know, Leaf doesn't have blue hair. I mean, the whole beginning of it is very Fire Emblem-esque. So when you look at that and consider that it's some kind of strategy-ish RPG, it's hard not to compare it to Fire Emblem in some ways.
Yes, but it is very different. It is not straight up turn-based. It is a real-time strategy game where you're moving people across the map. And that's one of the cool things about this map. The map is the map. You don't have like separate little chapters of like, okay, here's this specifically designed map, here's this specifically designed map. No, the entire game takes place on a giant overworld. Every map takes place on that overworld. And it's just like a little sectioned off part of it where all the battles take place. You summon your enemies to go up against their enemies. And how the battles work, you don't control what your people do in battle. Your people have different skills, powers they can activate based on like their classes or based on the equipment you've given them. They'll have different skills, but in the menus you have to go through the order of operations. You have to control the order of, okay, if it's the first turn, I want you to do this attack, or if the back row has a bunch of flying units, I want you to do this. You can get so in the minutia of what you can command your characters to do in what situations with both their active attacks and their passive abilities. It feels a little bit overwhelming, but I think the game does a good job of pacing you and introducing these elements at a good pace. And even if you don't go full on diving deep into it and min-maxing everything, you can still succeed and still accomplish your goals and still have a lot of fun while making some really cool units. And how do the units work? You have little armies. And at first, these armies will consist of 3 units. But then eventually you'll get the supplies and the renown to upgrade them to 5 and eventually to 4 and to 5 man units. And like finding the balance of how you want to do it. If you want to have an all archer squad, sure, you can do that. If you want to have it so you have like heavy armor on the front line, magic users in the back, you can do that too. If you want your thief to be the front line to dodge tank everything, you can do that. There are just so many viable options that work. You can build your armies, trust no one, Fire Emblem. Wait, no, you can just build your armies however you want to build them. You have so much customization. And before battle starts, you get a preview of like, hey, here's the result of this battle. even though there is RNG involved, there's still like 90% chance you can miss this attack or whatever. The game like runs through all that and tells you, here is the exact way this is going to work out. And you can manipulate the RNG by like using an item or having another person do another battle beforehand, or by moving your units around on the map or on the grid for your army. The game gives you all the tools to not cheat, but just cheese it a little bit. The game wants you to do that, encourages you to do that, to find the best outcome. And it is so satisfying and so much fun to play. The characters are great. And as I said before, this is Vanillaware. The guys who did Dragon's Crown, 13 Sentinels, play 13 Sentinels. It is absolutely breathtakingly beautiful characters, and the animations of the battle are so cool. It is a game I cannot recommend enough. The story, if you like Fire Emblem story, you're probably going to like this one, because it is about as solid and as traditionally Fire Emblem as it gets. But it is something I highly recommend. It is definitely one of my favorites of the year. Still loved Infinite Wealth a little bit more, but man, Unicorn Overlord was a wonderful experience, and I streamed it all on twitch.tv/cardwiz.
No matter what platform you're playing on, except for PC, because Vanillaware doesn't want their games on PC for whatever reason. I believe there's like a 4 to 5 hour demo, and the intro parts of the game actually don't count towards that timer. So like, you could play the intro parts of that game and take as long as you like for like an hour or two or whatever. And then once you get out of that to like the main game, it'll say, hey, you still have another 4 hours or whatever it is to play. So you get a long demo to play and decide if you actually like that game or not.
Yes, I highly recommended the demo, and the demo doesn't count when you're going through the menus, and a big part of the game is the menu. So you can like play with the menus, play with the units, play with their attacks, play with like their passives, play with the equipment. It's so much fun.
That's very generous. I jumped into several of your streams, and I can tell you that I could not tell anything that was actually happening. I was just shaking my head like, and then move the Bludgeon Sisters over there and have them do that thing.
My Bludgeon Sisters, they went from a meme to one of like my legitimately really good units once I started to get the correct passives on them. Once I got the ability to give those two Enrage and let my frontline shield fighter take all the damage for them, to let them build that rage up and let then unleash a full-on row attack and kill everything at a single blow. Yes.
And I was just sitting there. It's literally the Naruto quote from the dub where Naruto during the tuning exams goes, I haven't a clue what's going on here, but I'll act like I do. Believe it. That was me. But I still had a good time.
play those first couple of hours, like let them teach you the mechanics, and then I think most people will be able to understand how the game works and figure out how they want to play it. I was happy just constantly going to my menus, constantly tinkering things like, oh, I got a new unit or I got a new sword. Well, I gotta go figure out how I want to spend like the next 20 minutes trying to get this into a fun system for my army. But you don't have to do that. You can just charge in head forward. And like, if you're just doing on normal difficulty, you're still going to be able to handle it with little to no problem. You'll be able to brute force most of it.
Sounds like good stuff. It actually is on my radar, but as I've mentioned, I have a big Final Fantasy VII looming in front of me, but that's not why we're here today. Like I said, we're here on the 20th of April recording this episode, the birthday of Fire Emblem. The series turns 34. So why not go back and look at the first time Marth touched international shores with 2009's Fire Emblem Shadow Dragon for the Nintendo DS. So Cardwiz, when this game was first announced, what did you think about this game? I mean, Fire Emblem wasn't doing very well, and from what we know from the Tealius Memorial Collection books, we know that Path of Radiance and Radiant Dawn did so poor that Nintendo told Intelligent Systems, hey, these games have done really bad, so you guys can't make console games anymore. So their answer was, hey, let's go back to basics. Let's show them, according to the Ask Iwata, which is more like an Ask Sakurai, they wanted to go back to basics, and they said, hey, let's show them the excitement of an NES game. What was your thoughts on the announcement?
I was so excited. I was loving the idea of like taking an old Fire Emblem game, which was, it was just straight up an NES game. There wasn't a lot of the complexities that the modern Fire Emblems had at the time. So I was looking forward to like taking an old, what they deemed to be a classic story with the character that they deemed to be the face of their franchise with Marth. Because at that point, we still didn't really have Marth outside of Melee. So this was basically America's first exposure to the character. So I was very much excited and very looking forward to it. And I was so excited to have it on the DS because we hadn't had a Fire Emblem mobile game in 4 years, I believe. I think Sacred Stones had been like 4 years before that. And then the DS launched and we didn't have a Fire Emblem game on the DS for 4 years. And that just felt insane to me at the time. Even though we did get Path of Radiance and Radiant Dawn, it felt right to have Fire Emblem on a handheld again, because that's how I knew Fire Emblem originally. I was so excited to get Shadow Dragon.
Here's the funny thing. Like, I actually wasn't a Fire Emblem fan at the time. I was trying to think back in my mind, like, how did I feel about this announcement? I was just like, because supposedly the announcement was in 2007. And of course, I can't remember 2007 for anything. But I was like, even now I'm trying to think about what I was thinking. And I believe at the time I was not a Fire Emblem fan. I wouldn't start my personal Fire Emblem journey until probably late 2007 or maybe even sometime during 2008, where I looked at all the characters that were in Super Smash Brothers Brawl. And I was just like, look at all these characters that are in this game that I don't know about, and they're different games. So I wanted to try one of every single, franchise that was represented in Smash. Yes, I know I'm doing the thing that most Nintendo fans are super scared of. You know, they can only stick with Mario, Pokemon, and Zelda. But I was trying one of every single title, and the first game I ended up stumbling upon was Sacred Stones. Then I played Fire Emblem 7, and then I played Path of Radiance. So getting to see, I think I saw the artwork for Marth a little bit later, and I was just like, wow, he looks really different. And I remember at the time, people were calling this Marth, quote unquote, manly Marth, because Marth in Melee and Marth in Brawl had a more, like, I guess, feminine design. And so, yeah, I just remember people nicknaming this Marth Manly Marth. That's pretty much my recollection of anything at the time. Yeah, I was also not a big fan of the Nintendo DS. I'm still not really a big fan of the Nintendo DS, which is wild because I was all in on my Game Boy Advance. Loved all the games there. But when it came to the Nintendo DS, I think Nintendo, for me at the time, was really all about the casual market and the casual gimmicks. The thing that ultimately turned me off, And this does play into why I never played Shadow Dragon until it came backwards compatible on the Wii U, is that I was at a kiosk in either a Walmart or a Target, and I saw Legend of Zelda. What was it? Phantom Hourglass? Was that the first one that came out?
Yeah, that was the first one.
Yeah. And I remember being like, oh, okay, it's the sequel to Wind Waker. Because at this point, I had played and beat Wind Waker. I love Wind Waker. I was like, I'm not really too hot on the graphical style when you compare Wind Waker's cartoony graphics, cel-shaded graphics, to what they attempted to do with those same graphics and really just couldn't pull it off with the DS's hardware. But I was like, you know, it's still Zelda. I'm still a massive Zelda fan. And so I put my hands on the DS and I move the D-pad and he just, Link does not move. I'm like, okay. And so I start messing with the buttons. He does not move. And then I go, oh no. And oh, I took the stylus and he moved in the direction that I pointed the stylus, and I absolutely hated the controller setup or how the controls were set up. I'm like, and I even hit like start, like, is there like a standard controller option for any of this? And there wasn't. So I was just like, no, the DS is not for me. Although I actually would get my cousin's DS like sometime later, which, by the way, I did before play like Mario Kart DS. It's probably one of my favorite Mario Karts, but just playing Zelda, I was just like, the DS is just not for me. And so I was mostly Xbox 360 for that generation, even though I had a Wii.
Yeah, I had a lot of DS games, and the biggest ones were like that I had the most fun with were the visual novels. Hello, Phoenix Wright, Ace Attorney. Hello,
shout out to Castlevania.
Yeah, there were some solid action games. The Castlevania games did a pretty good job. I thought that a lot of other games were just sort of downgraded versions of what they could be. I didn't love the Mario and Luigi games that were on the DS. I thought Superstar Saga was better than both Inside Story and Partners in Time. Ugh. But there were still some good sort of hardcore tactics games on the DS. Even before Fire Emblem. Before Fire Emblem came out, you still had two Advance Wars games that came out. Those were a lot of fun, even though one of them was like weirdly realistic and depressing.
Was it Days of Ruin?
Yeah, that was Days of Ruin. Just like that was a weird design choice, but it's still a good tactics game. Like you, even Final Fantasy came out with tactics games before Fire Emblem did, with Tactics Advance 2. I don't know why they couldn't just do like Final Fantasy Tactics DS or whatever, but that was their decision for that weird name. Even Final Fantasy 12 Revenant Wings, which no one ever remembers or talks about. Like,
oh, wow. Yeah, that's right.
Like, the DS could have been a home for really good tactical RPGs, even if they use weird control schemes of, like, having to use the stylus to move people around the battlefield, which Shadow Dragon did do, as an option only.
Thank you.
But it still felt so weird. It was 4 years before we had a Fire Emblem game. And looking back at like how big the franchise would eventually sort of become for Nintendo, it just feels wrong and weird that it took that long to get the tactics game on the DS. And when they came out with it, they made choices. They made choices. We'll get to that.
They sure did make a lot of choices with this game. A lot of them I disagree with. And I think it's also why this game, despite being on the DS, which I believe it's up there with the PS2. I think the Switch passed the DS a little while ago, but it's up there in the hundreds of millions of units. And the sales numbers, of course, I grabbed these from Wikipedia right quick. Of course, they have, you know, their sources, blah, 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 blah. But 274,000 in Japan as of 2012 and 250,000 in North America as of 2013. And those are below what I remember the Sacred Stones sales supposed to be, which I believe is like 880,000. And I think that, you know, like a lot of games, number one, the casual market isn't looking at Fire Emblem. There's a lot of shovelware on the shelves, much like the Wii. And I also think that it was just the wrong time for this game to come out. Like, if this game had come out closer within like the first 2 years, I believe this would have sold much better.
Yes, because it would have sold much better. And then you could do a lot more improvements for the next game, which we didn't get.
Let's get on to what they actually added to this game. I wrote down a bunch of different things. So the additions that they made to this game would be colored tiles for movement and attack range, which I was actually surprised wasn't in Fire Emblem 1. And it kind of makes sense. Like because I have the 30th anniversary edition and it came with a digital copy. I was playing a little bit of that. I think I played like the first two or three levels of it and just kind of gave up on it. I was like, you can't tell where your movement or attack range is. You just kind of go certain spaces and it's just not there. So the color tiles for movement and attack range are great. They added the weapon triangle, which you're like, yes, thank you, weapon triangle. They added a class swap feature, which I'll talk about that a little bit later. They had some online multiplayer, which was a first for the Fire Emblem series, did you ever dabble with the multiplayer?
Not on the DS. Like the only multiplayer I ever did with Fire Emblem was the arena feature in Fire Emblem 7. And it's just, it's so ridiculous that Fire Emblem never had a two-player mode. Advance Wars had a two-player mode. You could have straight up done that, but whatever.
Co-op would be interesting with Fire Emblem, I think.
That would, yeah, heaven forbid, have a fun multiplayer sort of thing, but just like they didn't never bothered with that, really. Oh, well. Who wants to have tactics multiplayer? A lot of people.
Yeah, and so this is one that kind of boggled my mind. I was surprised it didn't have item inventory. Can you believe that? No inventory. I believe everyone has kind of like their personal inventory, so it's like, actually, maybe not even that. Gosh, it's been so long since I've played like Shadow Dragon for the NES/Famicom.
Don't worry. Anyone can go out there and play Fire Emblem, Shadow Dragon, and the Blade of Light, so long as they manage to buy it in between, you know, when it was released in like 2020 until March of 2021.
Ah, yes. 3 month period. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. I've got another check. I've got another point here in my notes, but I want to save that for later because I think you might be able to tell me a little bit more about this. So they added some really nice CG images in between chapters to tell the story, and it really brings up the presentation for the game. It may sound like I'm kind of negative on Shadow Dragon, but I kind of like it just for that. Like, you get these images of Marth and him looking over the kingdom and him looking at Elise when he needs to escape. You get images of Tiki and Nagi and all this other stuff, which I think is really good. And then the game also features like 6 prologue chapters to kind of like get you to where Marth actually is. Because in the first game, and I believe in Fire Emblem 3, it just drops you straight on that very first map. It's just like, yeah, here you are in Talos.
Yes, the prologue chapters were nice to sort of ease people in, because if this was the first Tactics game they'd ever played, it's a much kinder way to introduce people to it. As I've said, I am a huge proponent of Lin Mode and Fire Emblem 7. I love just a little bit of a tutorial to help ease people in, and to easier chapters like that help to introduce the world, introduce the characters, let you get to know these people, because that's the best part about Fire Emblem, is getting to know the characters and the units in your army.
And now for that, now to come back to the one that I was a little shaky on, Gaiden chapters. Cardwiz, what are the Gaiden chapters in this game?
Okay, we're going to get into this now. Oh boy.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I mean, we could save it for later, but.
No. I'll do the rant now.
Yeah, because I'm starting to remember it, and I think it's one of the dumbest things that they've ever wanted to do.
The thing that makes Fire Emblem special to me, what made me attached to it when I first played it, was you have this army of characters, of people, like with unique names, faces, and stories who you could have conversations with to, you know, support their characters. Hint, hint, wink, wink. But Fire Emblem Shadow Dragon decides to make an interesting choice. Fire Emblem Shadow Dragon is going through full on with the premise of gameplay above everything. And part of Fire Emblem's core gameplay in their mind is you let the people die via their permadeath. Because this is before the Phoenix mode. So there is permadeath in Shadow Dragon. So one of the ways they want to help you, the player, out: oh, you have so many characters dying, we will provide unique characters behind Gaiden special chapter walls. And how do you get over that wall? You have to have a certain number of people who have already died.
So the thing about permadeath, and I'll use Fire Emblem 7 for this as an example. So let's say you have your mage, right? His name is Urk. If you lose Urk sometime in the early game, it's kind of not really that much of a big deal, because later on you're going to get Pent. And Pent, I think, depending on how Urk levels up, he can either be equal to Pent or better than Pent, right? So,
or worse. That's just how RNG works.
Yeah, it's just how it works. But either way, like, you have your mage, and if you lose your mage, it's okay, because you're going to get another mage down the road. If you lose Rebecca, the archer, which happens to me a lot, it's okay, because you're going to get Luis down the road, and that's guaranteed. Guaranteed. But in this, if you, like you said, if you have a certain number of characters dead, that unlocks this Gaiden chapter that will let you get another character, which is another. And these characters are unique characters to these Gaiden chapters. Am I right?
I don't know that off the top of my head if they were in the original Fire Emblem at all. But honestly, you don't get to know the characters really in this game, as we'll talk about later. So
even if you don't
matter that much.
Okay, that, and that's fair. But like, even if you don't know the characters, you still know that, hey, that guy is my archer. I can put him there and he's going to wreck shop. I need that guy. That's my archer. So when that person dies and you don't have anybody to replace him, it's just like, well, who do I go to now? By the way, there's a lot of archers in this game. But if you get this guide and chapter, and for some reason, I'm thinking of a character named Edsel. I don't know why. He's the first person that pops into my mind. And I think the characters are unique to the guide and chapters. Now that I'm unlocking some kind of memory, but there's a character named Edsel who is a mage, right? So let's say you lose your archer and a couple of other characters, right? You lose your archer, you lose your one of your axe dudes. You lose characters that you don't need, but you already have a good pool of mages that you can use. So now you get this character named Edsel, who is a mage, and guess what? He's no use to your army because he doesn't replace that archer that you lost. He doesn't replace that axe user that you use, your lance user, your horse unit. Granted, you can do it. You can class swap, but
yes, you can class swap.
But not everyone fits into certain classes. Like, I don't think you would want to put like Navarre as a mage. That just doesn't work. Or maybe it does. I don't know.
Sadly, I have not actually physically touched this game in a while. It is on my gaming shelf, and I am sad to admit it. Before the shop closed, I did not get Shadow Dragon on the Wii U, one of the few places where you could actually access that game legally.
Yeah. When I ended up getting my cousin's DS, I remember I sent you a message because I was at GameStop and Shadow Dragon was right there in front of me. And I was like, dude, is Shadow Dragon actually worth it? Because I remember you and I, during this time, we were friends, but we weren't like super, super friends or whatever. And we were also we didn't talk about Fire Emblem that much, which was funny. And so I just sent you a message and you were just like, no, it's not a good game. I was like, all right, fine. And then I got Kirby Superstar Ultra, which, you know, yeah, that's a great game.
Solid choice.
Yeah. But these guiding chapters, like, why? What a stupid decision. This is dumb.
It tells me that they viewed strategy and permadeath as more important features than at least we did. And considering like most people I've talked to online about it, most other people feel very similarly. It is just an overestimation about what people liked about Fire Emblem is what they interpreted. Maybe people love letting characters die in Japan. Maybe that's the connection. I don't know. I don't know what they were thinking. It was just such a weird decision. Like, the joy of permadeath for me is I have to keep these people alive. And if someone dies, I am going to restart this until I keep them alive. They created a feature, a core aspect of the game where it's like, no, we want you to kill people. We want you to let people die. Maybe encourage people to die, which is not why I play Fire Emblem.
Yeah, you like the risk-reward factor. The risk is that you put your unit out there, and the reward is that your unit lives, gets to level up, gets better stats, gets better classes, you know, in other games, supports, and all that other stuff. Character growth, whether it be stat-wise, whether it be relationship-wise. And just to be like, well, this guy's disposable. Just go ahead and throw him out there. Anyway, he's dead. I guess I got a new person. It's just a betrayal, I think.
Betrayed me.
This game sucks. All right, actually. The artwork for this game is something that I have grown to dislike, except for Marth. I like the artwork of Marth in this game. And there's another piece of artwork where it shows like Marth, Minerva, Sita, and Ogma all fighting with a group of enemies around them. I think that one actually looks pretty good, but you know, we had some special illustrations done by Masanori Ota, whose pen name is Masamune Shiro of the Ghost in the Shell fame, which I've not seen the Ghost in the Shell manga. The only one I've actually ever seen is the standalone complex, I think from like early 2000s, which I remember being pretty good. And then some character artwork was redrawn by Daisuke Uzuka, who would go on to do the artwork completely for the next game. And it's such a leap ahead of what Masanori Ota did for this game. What are your thoughts on the artwork?
You have the beautiful 2D artwork of the GBA games. You have the beautiful 2D artwork from Path of Radiance and Radiant Dawn. And then you get to this. It feels like they're figuring out, okay, let's try to do 3D figures for the first time. And it doesn't look good. It feels like such a tremendous downgrade from what previous games had looked like. It might look fine on its own. But I can't look at it like that, because the right. four games I played before that had looked so good from the character portrait standpoint. And then years later, when we finally got a chance to see Fire Emblem again in America with Awakening, they went back to the beautiful 2D art style of the characters. And you just have this ugly stepchild of Fire Emblem Shadow Dragon with you, just very rudimentary looking early adapter 3D-ish model character looking things, which just look like ugly claymation to me.
And talking about the actual character graphics, or are you talking about the actual physical artwork?
Right now I'm just talking about like the artwork and of the characters that you see on the screen, but like even when you get to the battle animations, I haven't talked about the battle animations yet. The battle animations just look generic as hell. They don't look good.
Yeah, I mean, I'll stand by the original like Marth artwork. I do think that's actually pretty good, and it's very standoutish. In fact, like this is so good that if Masahiro Sakurai knew about it, he said that he would have made that Marth's design, which goes to a funny story. He shows up to Intelligent Systems and is presenting what Marth looks like in Brawl. But before he can do that, the director for, I believe, this game says, "Hey, man, come check this out," and shows him Shadow Dragon. And Sakurai himself is a little bit dejected. He's like, "Oh," and you can find this if you look up the, you know, I'll put this in the notes. Of the ASCII WADA, again, ask Sakurai, that Sakurai was like, "Oh, if I would have known about this, I would have made this Marth's design for this game." I'm glad he didn't.
I'm glad he didn't too. But
again, I think it's a fine piece of artwork on its own.
Yeah, I want to try to rephrase something I said I like a lot of the designs. I think it is a very bad art style. I think the art style is the issue for me. I think the art style is just unappealing to the eyes compared to what came before it and what would come after it. I think it is the worst art style for a Fire Emblem game that we have ever had.
I think it says a lot that when you look at future Fire Emblem projects such as Fire Emblem Cypher and Fire Emblem Heroes, that this artist has not come back. Then again, because Ghost in the Shell is such a big name, I don't know how big it is to like right now, but it could be that, you know, Masanori Ota, the price is too high for them to come back. You know what I mean? But still, they've never done any other like character illustrations or anything for Fire Emblem. Graphically, though. Actually, you know what? Let me talk about the artwork one more time. Okay. I don't like Minerva's artwork in this game. I do not like Minerva's artwork in this game at all. When I said I like Marth, I like the Marth artwork. Ogma's fine. I think even Sita's fine. Minerva's artwork it just looks bad. It looks bad. You know. Now let's talk graphically.
Go. You take the lead on it. This one.
Oh boy. It seems like. It seems like graphically what they wanted to do was do what Rare did with the Donkey Kong Country games, and that is that they take these 3D models and they pull them back into 2D. And those 2D sprites digitized, they stick out really. Number one, they don't look good. Number two, they don't match the character designs at all. Like if you think about the Game Boy Advance games, again, and the reason why I'm comparing him to the Game Boy Advance games and not, say, Path of Radiance is because those characters already look like those characters. But with the Game Boy Advance games, they'll take a sprite, which has this design, and they will kind of edit it in some ways, but they'll at least make it look like the character. Like, this is going to look like Nino. This looks like Joshua, even though it doesn't have the hat, which is a crime. Please remaster Sacred Stones, give Joshua the hat. I mean, you can just leave the game the same. Just give Joshua the hat. That's all you have to do. Do it for me. You owe me. But these characters don't even look like the characters. Like, you'll have a character. I'm thinking about Navarre, I want to say. And Navarre, if you don't know what he looks like, he's the Scarlet Swordsman. He's got long flowing black hair. He wears like this cool red robe. In his battle sprite, he wears blue. And I believe he has short blonde hair, if I remember right. I could be misremembering, but certain characters are like that, where it's just like, here's this character's design. Here's exactly what they look like. And their battle sprite looks nothing like them. The 2D-ish animations are very plain, very basic. They don't look good on the backgrounds. They don't look good when you're playing on the Nintendo Wii U. Let me put it this way. The battle animations for this game look so poor that I turn them off. And I almost never turn off the battle animations because I like watching them. I think they're fun. The actual map that you're moving your characters on the grid also looks bad. It's just
you can use your stylus to move the people around.
That's
not like you're drawing on the map. It's like you're drawing on the little map.
That's not too bad. but it's an option, right? Like, you have the option to use the stylus, which is great, because a lot of games during that time were just like, no, you have to use this weird, wonky control design that we designed for this game, and you will like it. And the reason why I get so up in a tizzy about the graphics is because we have graphically great-looking games on here. Super Mario 64 DS looks great for what it is. Super Princess Peach looks good for what it is. Golden Sun, Dark Dawn, and oh my god, I'm praising Golden Sun. Golden Sun, Dark Dawn looks pretty good, and I know it came a couple of years after, but still, like, watch the summons, man. Just watch the summon sequences alone. Look at the camera work. Anyways, but this game, it looks so poor. Like, what happened?
It is a baffling decision to go with that art style. I truly don't understand. It is utterly baffling that they have did that. I don't see how they could look at that and say, this is what we want to represent our franchise. Let's ship it.
Like, it didn't even look good for the time. And I know Fire Emblem has never been like the big graphical showpiece. In fact, I would say that the big graphical showpiece for Fire Emblem was probably Awakening. I think that was like the first game that actually was like, whoa, I know people go, oh no, they don't have feet. But like, the characters look like the characters. The sprites look, or not the sprites, but the 3D models look like the characters, unless you did like a weird class change, and you know how it goes. And then I think the next game that was the big graphical upgrade was probably Fire Emblem Engage. But I'm sorry, Fire Emblem Three Houses, then Fire Emblem Engage.
Engage was an even bigger step up. Engage is freaking beautiful.
Yeah, Engage is ridiculously pretty and colorful. But this looked, like I said, this looked bad even for the time that it came out in. And I think that it's aged even worse.
It looked bad back then. It looks bad now. Nothing can change that, sadly.
Go back and look at Fire Emblem Binding Blade, Blazing Blade, and Sacred Stones, because they all have the same graphics. We'll just say the GBA. But look at that GBA graphic style, and people are still talking about how flashy and cool the sprites look. Even the most basic attack feels good. And I'll give you that. I think the Shadow Dragon actually looks cool. I'll say the Shadow Dragon, Medius in his dragon form, actually does look cool. It looks much better than the one on the Super Famicom.
Speaking of the Shadow Dragon, let's talk about the story. Bad guys invade nation, need sacred sword in order to defeat the dragon, but sword has been taken. Good guys go get sword. Good guys go beat bad dragon. There you go.
It's basic.
It's all it needs to be.
It's basic and it's all it needs to be. And I think that storytelling is fine. But during this Ask Iwata, Ask Sakurai, the director's like, oh yeah, we had a bunch of story stuff planned, but we decided just to scale all that stuff back. I'm just like, what? You had the ability to make this game Marth's big coming out party for the international audience with all the story stuff and fixings. There are no supports, so you don't really get to know the characters. And I'll defend this a little bit because there are a lot of characters in this game. A lot of characters in the game.
So many friends to get to know.
But Marth doesn't fight for his friends.
No, he doesn't.
He fights for his country, his people.
Freaking warrior prince.
Yeah, ugh, the hero king. Right?
Ugh. Yeah.
But the choice to scale back the story rather than expand it like Echoes did in 2017 is just, I mean, just me going back and reading that, I was just like, wow, you had everything just like right here and you just didn't do anything with it. Like, I think about, again, it's perhaps, you know, it's kind of the Persona 3 thing, Reload thing we were talking about earlier, how it's probably not fair to compare it to Persona 5. But when I think about Echoes and how they took that kind of skeleton framework of a story and blew that out to something that's one of my favorite games in the Fire Emblem series, it's because of that story and the characters. Some of the support stuff's not great, but at least they actually put effort into it.
Nah, they perfected storytelling on the NES in 1990. No need to improve it. We're good.
And I think that's why this game failed internationally. Supposedly, Intelligent Systems, according to sources, they were just like, yeah, we're happy with the sales in Japan. How are you happy with that when it's lower than the Game Boy Advance? How are you happy with that when it's barely scraping what your previous two games did?
They were happy enough with it that they continued and made Fire Emblem 3 Remake and just only released it in Japan,
which barely scraped 250,000. Poor decisions that were made on this project. It's frustrating.
Need to take this time to once again thank the Lord. Thank you for Fire Emblem Awakening.
Yes, thank you for Awakening. Praise Awakening. Praise House Virion, Duke Virion. So Virion, Card was just shaking his head. I can't turn this into the Virion episode. I'm so sorry. I'm trying.
This is the Emblem Support Podcast, and we need to do the thing we love about Fire Emblem: celebrate the characters by delving into their supports. Now, which support from Fire Emblem Shadow Dragon should we select to get to further? Get to know all of these small characters? Like, we don't have to just get to know Marth. We can get to know all of these other members of their army by letting them converse with each other. Who do we support with? Who are we covering in the support today?
Nobody. There are no supports for this game. But we are going to do supports. But I do want to ask you one thing. If someone had never played Fire Emblem and they said, what's a good game to start with? Could you give them Shadow Dragon, knowing that Shadow Dragon is a basic, is all hell game, and that everything that comes a little bit before this and a little bit after this is such a step up?
I would never, ever recommend Shadow Dragon as a first Fire Emblem game.
Ooh, ladies and gentlemen, Cold Whiz over here. Let me ask you another question. Do you think that this game is the definitive way to play Marth's Adventure? Or do you think there really isn't a definitive version of Marth's Adventure that we can play as? Because remember, we have Fire Emblem 1, we have Fire Emblem 3, Book 1 and 2, and then we have Shadow Dragon, and of course the game that comes after it, which is the second half of Book 2.
Shadow Dragon is sadly the best way to experience Marth's story. That's not saying much, sadly. It's like, hey, if you bought Shadow Dragon and the Blade of Light back in 2020, because that was the only year you could buy it, you can experience Fire Emblem that way in the most retro way possible with some quality of life stuff added. But overall, just like Marth's story hadn't been told that well. Just like, I'm trying to remember, did the history mode in Fire Emblem Warriors tell his story anyway?
No, because you were missing so many characters.
Dang it. That still might be the best way to experience his story through Fire Emblem Warriors.
I'm going to go a different route. And I think that if this was someone's first Fire Emblem experience, I think that they might. And if I think I would recommend this as maybe an entry point. I know probably kind of it's kind of weird because of how I've kind of slammed this game. But when I think about the basic nature of it, and this is what I was just saying, knowing that knowing that games like the Game Boy Advance games and the Awakening forward, that everything's much better than this, I feel like this is as low as you can go, right? And I do think that this game actually made me a bigger fan of Marth than I already was from Smash Brothers. And again, I do think there are good things here. The prologue chapters are good. The CG images that help tell these stories. If this is your first experience with a Fire Emblem title, you might enjoy it. Hell, you might even turn this podcast off, be curious to go find this game somewhere, and play it, like it, and disagree with everything that we have to say. Because I do think from a gameplay perspective, which they put over everything else, that is a solid foundation for what things could come. And you might just want to check it out as a curiosity. So I'll give it points for that.
Like, if you want to experience a good tactics game, just straight up, that is all you desire, Shadow Dragon is fine. It is 7 out of 10, if I'm being generous. It is perfectly fine. If that is your desire, I'm going to sit down and play a medieval fantasy strategy turn-based game specifically for the DS. Shadow Dragon is your choice. Congratulations. I'll stick with the GBA and basically every other Fire Emblem game that is available to me.
I think we've been fair with our criticism. And we did mention our support section. After all, this is the Emblem Support Podcast. Since this game features no actual supports, we're having to dive into other places for supports. And I guess we will start with, I guess mine's shorter, so I guess we'll start with me. Is that okay with you?
Go for it.
So in place of a support, I chose Marth's level 40 support, but not just any Marth. This is the Marth that won Choose Your Legend of a few years back. I think he's called the Keeper of Faith. He has a special attire based on Onry, which is which Marth is descended from. I lost my words, folks. But Marth is descended from the hero Onry, and so he's wearing his attire, which is a nice red, white. He's got the shield, got a great sword. Not a great sword, but a really cool-looking sword. It might be the Falchion, I cannot remember. Kind of a running theme for the podcast today. My poor, sick, allergy, flu-riddled mind is getting to me. But anyways, here's a nice quote. I can still remember the feeling in my hands when I first took up a sword. It was so heavy, so sharp, dangerous. I felt so helpless, wondering if I could ever manage to use such a blade. But since then, I have swung a sword thousands, no, 10,000s of times, I'm sure. I use it for the sake of my people and their future, for those yet to come. It is because of the support people have given me that I am where I am today. I want to live up to their faith in me and repay that support somehow. That is how I wield my blade. And as long as I have something I must protect, I will likely continue to do so with an eye towards a brighter future. I love this. I love
Marth. Good job, Hero King. Yeah.
I absolutely love Marth. For any complaints I have, I love the character of Marth. I love him and Sita together. They're great.
Yeah, it just further just pushes to show like how unfortunate it is that we don't have like a good telling of Marth's story. But
yeah,
he has been represented well in other Fire Emblem games, at least. Let his legacy live on through that rather than his own actual games, sadly.
So that was mine. What have you chosen, Cardwiz?
Well, in order to celebrate the story of Marth, the story of the Shadow Dragon and the Blade of Light, I figured I'd find a support featuring one of the characters from that game. And there happens to be a game where one of those characters is in it. I am speaking, of course, of Tiki, the legendary dragon who Marth befriended within his story And we get to hear a little bit about that, or I assume we hear a little bit about that, as Tiki has a conversation with Robin, male Robin, as a matter of fact, from Fire Emblem Awakening.
So, since my voice is still wrecked, would you care if I was Robin?
Perfectly fine.
All right.
Dot, dot, dot.
Sigh,
dot, dot, dot.
Can I help you, Tiki? You've been, staring at me for a long time.
Oh, I'm sorry, Robin. Was I bothering you?
I was more worried that something might be bothering you.
Well, it's just that you look remarkably like someone I used to know.
Oh?
Somebody that I used to know. Oh, sorry.
Oh?
Yes. Specifically, a man named Marth. Many ages past, this was. He was wise, calm, and fair, but possessing an inner strength as resilient as steel.
Marth? You mean the warrior king of legend?
The one and same. I had the honor to call King Marth a friend, so perhaps you can understand why I gazed upon you with nostalgia and longing.
Sorry, did you say...
Still, it was rude of me to stare. I apologize.
Oh, not at all. It's exciting to know that I resemble someone so storied.
All right, we are going to learn a little bit about good old Marth and these supports, it looks like.
Robin does not look like Marth, though.
He can. You can give Robin the blue hair.
Here's an interesting thing. If you go to the FE Wiki and look at, it actually might be in Tiki's gallery support, in the gallery for Tiki, you'll see a version of the S support where you can actually see the version of Robin she's like hugging or whatever. And that version, they drew him with blue hair.
Heck yeah.
In the game, in the actual game though, you can't see the avatar. You can like, I think you may be able to see like an arm or something of his, but some versions of the S support CGs actually show you a little bit of the avatar in the concept art, but not in the game.
They should have gone the extra mile and made this a blue-haired Robin Locke support.
Okay, so when we start our Awakening playthrough for the podcast... I won't tease that. That's mean.
Yeah, let's move on to the beast, see how this goes.
Ah, Tiki, just the person I was looking for.
What is it, Robin?
Remember when you told me about your friendship with King Marth?
Oh, yes, what of it?
You were referring to the King Marth, right? The man from 2 millennia ago? Well, he's a distant relation to Crom, is he not?
That is correct.
So, I was wondering, wouldn't Crom resemble him more than me?
Perhaps because Crom is not like Marth. He's much more direct and committed to what he believes is right. Crom might more resemble a different ancestor from the age I was born in. Another great man in their line. From 1,000 years before Marth. But the Marth of my time was wise and fair and won hearts with his kindness.
I see. So when you say I resemble Marth, you weren't talking about my appearance.
No. I was referring to your soul. An aura of kindness and goodness surrounds you, Robin. Just as it did wise King Marth.
Well, that is most flattering. I don't know what to say.
What is it, Marmar?
Marmar?
Forgive me, I was in the habit of calling Marth by that name. It must have slipped out by mistake. Oh, gracious, the resemblance is so uncanny. It's making me forget what millennium it is.
I suppose there are worse people to be mistaken for.
Please, forgive me.
Actually, I must admit, I rather enjoy the intention. Oh, that's kind of nice. Again, she's more about the soul of Robin resembling Marth than the physical one, like we mistakenly did on the C support, which makes sense.
Oh, I guess we can support with a green-haired Robin. Fine.
But I do have maybe one problem with this.
What's your problem?
So in other media, because the avatars are essentially player versions of the character, like you kind of put your own, you put a little bit of your personality into Robin. You put a little bit of your personality into Chris. You put a little bit of your personality into Mark, the tactician from FE7. There's this constant thing, and I feel like we said this in like a way earlier episode where it might have even been like when we talked about avatars, I want to say all the way in like episode 5 or 6, maybe.
Probably. Oh, dear Lord, that was long ago.
Yeah, I know. Where they had this thing where they kept kind of hinting that the soul of the avatar is reincarnated. So Mark's soul kind of got reincarnated into Chris, and Chris kind of got reincarnated into Robin. So they're all kind of the same person, but they're supposed to be you. You feel me?
I get what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm probably saying it really badly, but then also saying our soul, oh, we're also like Marth as well. It's just like, okay, please. We're not like everybody. Please chill, Tiki.
Poor Crom. Crom is nothing like Marth, according to her. Although it gives hints at whoever Tiki was friends with 1,000 years before Marth. Apparently that person's like Crom.
Yeah. Never mind. Anyways. I like the support. It's pretty good.
Well, let's see how it develops. On to the A. Robin.
Hello, Tiki. It's just me today. No more Mar here, I'm afraid.
Oh, I know who you are, Robin. I apologize again for my mistake. You have no memories of your past, do you, Robin? It must be especially unnerving then for someone to confuse you for another. For all I know, you might start thinking you are that person.
Please, I was only fooling. Don't give it another thought.
Even so, it must be frightening to look into your past and see nothing. I know that better than most. For long ago, I fell under the control of an evil man.
I'm touched by your concern, but you don't have to worry about me. Still friends?
Oh, I hope so.
Well, to be honest, I don't even mind if you call me Mar-Mar. After all, it's not so strange for a close friend to share nicknames, is it, Tiki Wiki?
Okay, well, maybe not.
No, that's a bad nickname.
Tiki Wiki.
Tiki Wiki. Sounds, oh my god, what is that? It's a British show, isn't it?
Isn't that like Tinky Winky? Wasn't that a Teletubby?
Yes, it's the Teletubby. it was on the tip of my tongue. I'm like British kids show.
All right, no. So you heard it out there, fans. We do need Tiki as a Teletubby art.
Is it the purple one?
I never watched Teletubbies. I don't know.
There's a whole controversy, but
I remember Teletubby controversy. Yeah. Like one of them carried a purse or something.
It was awful. Anyways, but yeah. This A support's for an awakening support. This A support's pretty short.
Pretty short support, but it's like I'm enjoying like the personality we're seeing from Robin. I'm enjoying like the relationship developing between him and Tiki. It's just like just a fun little conversation. And like as you were kind of hinting at before, it's just like, does Robin have the spirit of Fire Emblem One Marth within him? Because Fire Emblem One Marth was kind of sort of the tactician of that game. Spooky. Who knows?
There's also something with Tiki in this game. Like, she is a divine dragon, but she doesn't really fit, like, the image of one. And so she, all the time, she's telling people, oh, you know, you can just kind of treat me normal, you know, let's. And I think this is more of kind of bringing her down to earth a little bit. Now, there is a specific music track that plays with Tiki, with most of Tiki's supports called, quote, "You Have a Power Like Mine," unquote. And even it's actually a remixed version. I want to say it's either Tiki's theme from Fire Emblem 12, or it's some kind of remixed version of one of her themes from back in the day. And it's a very nice, very calm, very peaceful song. And it kind of lends into that divineness of Tiki, even though she doesn't see herself like that. She wants to just be like everybody else.
You're right. This support should be more like Engage, and everyone needs to be praising her as the divine dragon with every other line.
No. Don't listen. listen. I know they just put Fram and Heroes as like a bunny alt or whatever, Don't let her find out that Tiki is a divine dragon, please.
That was a fun little support. I'm glad we got to know Tiki and Robin a little bit better. That went pretty well. I'm happy that the support went well. Don't you think so?
Hold on a minute there, player. You got one more support. This is Awakening, my friend. I know we've been out of the game for a little bit, but you thought you could just walk on by, pretend like nothing was going to happen. This is a male and a female in Fire Emblem Awakening. You know what happens. You know what happens after the A support. The people know what happens after the A support. Our listeners have a certain expectation for you.
On to the S. Robin.
So you're not going to call me Marmar after all, huh?
I much prefer Robin. Don't you?
Yes, of course I do. It's just that, well, I have no family here, nor even memories of a family. When you called me by a nickname, the truth is I rather liked it, even if it was someone else's nickname.
I understand, and I considered it, but there can only be one Marmar. That was Marth, the great king of ages past.
Yes, well, fair enough, I suppose. I'm hardly qualified to fill his shoes.
And there is one more reason I cannot call you by that name.
And that is?
Because you two are a singular and a very special man to me. You are the man whom I've fallen in love.
Tiki?
This is why you must be Robin.
What a relief. I thought you were going to say it's because I reminded you of someone else.
Don't be absurd.
Truth is, I've been hoping against hope that we might be together, but dared not ask.
Why not?
Well, you've lived for a millennia, seen the legendary heroes with your own eyes. You knew the hero King Marth himself. And compared to him, what am I? I felt I had to be as great as him, as mighty, and as powerful. Otherwise, you couldn't help but find me lacking in comparison.
Oh, Robin.
Are my fears truly groundless? Can I allow myself to love you?
Of course, Robin.
Then the two of us together shall build a new world of peace.
Oh, Robin, that's just what I want as well. I know that to love another, I must watch the world move past him. But such short years make an eternity worth living. That could have been worse.
Yeah. It's all right.
I liked it. I thought it was kind of sweet. Robin not wanting to be in love because like she's known so many great men in her past. How can I measure up that trope? That was fun. That was very solid for an S support. Yay.
I thought it was okay.
Overall, like we got more information on Marth. Learned about how Tiki sort of admired and felt about him, and learn how Marth and Crom are not the same dudes. Sorry, Crom. You get a little bit thrown under the bus, but you get compared to some guy from 1,000 years before that who we don't know. So, all right. There's like overall, one other line that I really liked. I enjoyed like Robin being like, I liked being having a nickname because I don't have any memories of anything, even if it was someone else's nickname. Like, I really, really like that line for an S support.
Yeah, because, you know, Robin is a pretty lonely person, you know, all things considered. But I think that wraps everything up here today. Well, I guess if you had to give this support a rating, what would you give it?
I liked it. Did I really like it? It's at least a 3. I think I'd go like a 3.5 if I'm cheating and giving 0.5s out.
Yeah, that's fair. I do the same. About a 3 out of 5. The S support doesn't hurt it, but the S support doesn't help it either. And I think the reason why I would say maybe a 3 is because the A support is so short and doesn't really do anything. And that will do it for this episode of the Emblem Support Podcast. Having to record a new outro because my dogs needed to let you know about their opinions on Shadow Dragon, and they needed to do it very loudly. But hey, what can you do? follow us, you can follow CardWiz at twitch.tv/CardWiz and on his Twitter at KDCorley. As for me, you can follow me on Twitter at PlanOrdo, twitch.tv/PlanOrdo, and then for the podcast at EmblemSupports on Twitter, Threads, and Instagram. And with all that said, chapter complete.